Z103.com, your home for 7 decades of great music. Monty the Music Man Severance hanging out with you, and it's time for episode number 24 of The Basics in Economic Development. Mark Wickersham, good morning.
Good morning again, Monty.
Great to have you here, as always.
Thank you. Great to be here. And today's topic is a very appropriate topic, I think, about water capacity.
Now,
most people think I'm all wet anyway, so water capacity is probably a pretty good topic for us.
That's awesome.
So, among the many challenges that communities face around the nation, frankly, as they, consider their future growth, is the outlook for utility capacity, and in particular, water. And how many years has our nation had discussions about, it's one thing to have water for consumption when you're in the Midwest or the Southeast or the Northeast. If you're in the Western states, water is a huge, huge issue for Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, and others in the West. So we're very fortunate in the Midwest and in Indiana to have, generally speaking, very, very ample water supplies. But even still, water capacity has become a hot debate this year in Indiana, especially as the race for governor shapes up. The central nerve, if you will, on that argument is the what's called the Boone County Leap District. It's an economic development district created and organized with and by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation in support of their future anchor tenant, a company by the name of Eli Lilly. And if you can get Lilly as an anchor, it obviously leads to numerous opportunities. Well, in a race to develop a mega site in Boone County on the northwest side of Indianapolis, the state of Indiana accidentally used the site development process system, which skipped a bunch of fundamentals. Basics like, for example, how much water capacity is at their site? I mean, we've talked about this on earlier shows, that before Huntington County Economic Development takes any kind of action on what we refer to as a greenfield site, we want to make sure we know whether we can get utilities there, whether it can be served with electricity. If so, how much do we have? Natural gas, same discussion. How difficult is it? And at what capacity levels? And obviously the ability of municipal water and sewer systems to provide water. Well, as a result of the sort of mistake and being in a hurry to accommodate and develop and take advantage of the opportunity, the oversight in Boone County, at the fault of the IEDC, as we call it, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, the oversight resulted in a proposal that now they don't have enough water on site to serve the project, and so the state of Indiana is recommending that water cross county lines and be brought from the city of Lafayette, 35 miles away, down to Lebanon, Indiana, in Boone County. And they're talking about 100 million gallons of water a day.
Whoa.
Over 35 miles. That seems to be a pretty large amount of water. It sounds like 100 million's big number. By comparison, it's like the town of Roanoke and the town of Markle combined for the year. That's 100, basically 100 million gallons, and they're wanting to move that per day from Lafayette to Lebanon at a massive expense.
I was going to say, with the amount being that large, yes, it would seem very almost like an insurmountable obstacle, wouldn't it?
Well, it's a funny thing. You give talented engineers enough money, unlimited budget and unlimited regulatory support, talented engineers can pull off just about anything. The question is, what's the ROI for the taxpayer? When do you get your money back? How long does it take? What's the cost benefit of doing that, and so forth? But that's not the only question. the bottom line question that Huntington County is interested in knowing, the water source for that project is what's known as the Wabash Alluvial Aquifer. It's basically an underground water system, subterranean water system, that parallels the Wabash River corridor from basically Allen County to Tippecanoe County. And the Wabash Alluvial Aquifer is the same water source that Huntington needs and uses on a daily basis. So we're interested in knowing if that project in Boone County is going to have any kind of an impact on Huntington County and our water capacities and usages. Well, the IEDC, who created this district and this problem, they believe the aquifer does have plenty of capacity for everybody, and they've employed several engineering firms to collaborate on an aquifer research report and capacity study. That preliminary material is now available and was announced in late August in the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. As though everything's fine. In fact, the Journal Gazette article was dated the 26th of August on the front page. So there are efforts trying to get to the bottom of whether that subterranean aquifer can supply everybody's needs. But when you think about the context of the numerous controversial decisions the state made to even create the thing in the first place, needless to say, there are a number of counties, not the least of which is Tippecanoe County, Lafayette itself, the county commissioners there. Everybody's a little skeptical that this report may or may not be right. And to make matters even worse on this sort of thing, from that perspective with the controversies, the Indiana General Assembly's House Ways and Means Committee convened this week for a discussion about a request from the IEDC for an additional $150 million to support the water infrastructure and other projects related to the LEAP district in Lebanon. So again, this is a very hotly debated campaign question. On the one hand, as you might imagine, the retiring governor probably would like to do a favor for the candidates for governor by getting all this approved in advance so the incoming governor doesn't have to deal with it. The trouble with that is that it takes the decision really out of the hands of the voters. And I think the voters probably would rather hear both candidates for office discuss what their plans are before another $150 million are spent. Now, regardless of all of that, in our case, in Huntington County, I'm working on an effort to assemble publicly available data from each municipality in the county to have a solid idea of our current consumption and capacity, etc. Our local governments already know about all their water systems. They're professionals. They really don't need my help in trying to figure out what the systems do. But I think by putting together, an inventory report, we can get a better picture of our reliance on the aquifer and, you know, have better data to make any necessary local adjustments as we evaluate our comprehensive strategic development plans. So in a logical public research that I'm attempting to assemble, it includes things like, okay, well, what are the water sources themselves? Now, understand also, my report's not going to specifically identify the physical locations of any of this infrastructure because, frankly, that creates a security risk that I don't want to be responsible for. I want the data so we kind of know, but I don't want to include references to a particular wellhead infrastructure is located at County Road, whatever, next to somebody's house. There are a lot of people in our county who already kind of know that because they live next to them. But on the other hand, there's who knows where this report might end up, so I don't want to get too detailed in that process. But I want to know, like, our water sources, typically they're what we call wellheads, and so how many gallons per minute do they produce and at what pressures? Communities are required to have overhead storage capacity. That's how we actually, the water towers actually create the pressurization of the entire system, as well as to provide help for like fighting fires and that kind of thing. So we have overhead storage capacity questions that we need to make sure that we understand. We need to know the age and capacity of our existing water plants and their ability to grow. We want to make sure that we've got a handle on the total annual water consumption numbers. I mentioned, you know, Markle and Roanoke earlier. We need that countywide. It's going to be a little bit hard to get the data for, you know, the number of people in rural areas that have individual wells on their property that are tapping the same aquifer, but to quantify their consumption is a little nebulous. And then again, to the extent publicly available, we're trying to make sure that we've got a report that talks about the planned expansion or capital improvement plans that each community might have.
You know, and it brings up an interesting question, and not to oversimplify it, which I hope I don't do, but could it be a major help to the whole project in general if residents would do more things to make their homes more efficient instead of having the old 1970s 3-gallon-a-minute shower heads go to a 1.5 GPM, make your aerators on your faucets more efficient, that kind of thing?
Well, that's a possibility, I suppose, but the work that I do is at the industrial level, so what we're trying to do with our industries is a variation of that theme with industrial consumption, because that's really when you look at the overall, how much water can I save at my home versus how much water can I save if I'm a food manufacturer, a totally different scale. I focus on industrial activities, and you're not wrong. And out west, it's actually a standard that they live by every day, that when you know you don't have a lot of water available, you change your habits. You just do. Sometimes that's required by government. Sometimes that's done voluntarily. It's a little bit different setup out west. We've been kind of fortunate in the Midwest because we do have, you know, ample supplies, and the Great Lakes are nearby. So the fresh water supplies capacity is a little bit different in the East Coast and the Midwest. But you know, conservation makes sense. It's just the question of, is it a heavy-handed mandate from government, or are we doing it because we're wanting to be, you know, good stewards of how we manage our households?
So the principle is kind of the same, industrial versus residential. Everyone's trying to be more efficient in their operation.
Absolutely. And in the industrial process, we do what are called net metering. I just got myself in trouble because I went from a basics of economic development to advanced flow meters. I'm sorry, that's what I was trying to think of. So, for example, if you're a company that makes a product that consumes a lot of water, okay, the local water bills are based on, you know, water coming in as the basis for my sewer bill, water going out, right?
Yes.
Well, what if I consume 2/3 of my water in the process of manufacturing, or if I recycle, then my sewer bill shouldn't be based on just how much water came in, because the water's not the same going out. So the city does what's called install flow meters to actually monitor that question in a more fair way. But yeah, the companies involved that are big water consumers, it's a huge expense, and they have to make sure they're monitoring their expense appropriately. They also have to make sure that the city works with them, as do the towns around, to make sure that the consumption is in line with the capacity to deliver that water.
Wow. I like it. And I know with cleaning up the rivers, the combined sewer project being separated, that could open up a lot of things, I would imagine, in healing those waterways and perhaps giving more access to a better quality of water.
Oh, there's no question that that's an improvement, and it's been an ongoing project in Huntington since 1973, and the citizens in Huntington right now are seeing the last major piece of that effort that started in 1973 with the Clean Water Act from Congress. And Huntington's former congressman, the late Congressman J. Edward Rausch, served at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency at one point. And so we had, you know, somebody sitting in the offices of EPA nationally who were well aware of the details and trying to do that in as fair a process as could be done. But, you know, I felt sorry for when Brooks Fetters became mayor several years ago, the very first week he gets a call from the Indiana Attorney General telling him, look, the city of Huntington is behind schedule and getting all these upgrades made to be in compliance with the Clean Water Act, and the message was, thou shalt get this done. The Attorney General put it in what was called an agreed order that forced our hand in the community. So it became a huge expense all at once and a huge inconvenience with the construction all at once. And the Fetters administration and now the Strick administration both ultimately are going to be, you know, the administrations that brought us fully compliant with the 1973 standards.
Right, and it's hard because sometimes that can get kicked down the road in the name of austerity, but it eventually you're going to have to do it regardless, and it may have been easier to do that with 80s or 90s dollars than it is with 2024 dollars.
Well, I can't reinvent history.
True that.
But there's no argument that that's true. It's just that was, and it still is. It is an incredibly expensive process, and if we're going to continue to grow as a community, it's something we have to do. And again, all of these sorts of discussions aren't necessarily going to be helpful to any kind of public challenge to the state's project in Boone County. But if nothing else, it's going to help us locally better serve the public and understand how this works as we grow.
Wow, incredible stuff. Anything more we want to cover on this morning?
I think we've worn our listeners out for the moment.
All right. Well, we'll empty the watering can and get back into some music again. Mark, thank you for hanging with us
this
morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Back we go to the music.